So, hi, welcome. We are running a few minutes late because, as you might have seen, we've got a rather complicated setup here in front. So I'm really intrigued about what we're going to see now. So this is Felix. Felix is going to talk about computers in cars. Please give him a round of warm applause and have fun.
Hey, yeah, I'm Felix Domke. Today's talk will be about scripting your car. So I did some other hacking work before. I worked on gaming consoles, and the number one goal for me was always to run my own code on anything. So I guess that should include cars. I guess it's a valid question to ask, why would you want to do anything like that? So I love hacking, and I love programming, and I love programming in Python, and I don't really love cars. I mean, they are a reasonable way of transportation, but I don't really love them. I mean, I use them, and I use them way too often, actually, and I figured out that I'm spending so much time in a car that it would be stupid to not try to combine hacking and programming with cars. And also, I read this on the internet that the next tempting new target is your car, so, well, let's hack the car. I guess you all heard this, and I guess it's true. If you can't open it, you don't own it. And I'm not a car mechanic, and if I open the car and take it apart, I'm pretty sure there will be some screws left when I put it back together, and I don't want that. I want the car to still work, and I don't know much about car engines, so what's better than working on a car engine, at least for me? Well, it's adding Python to your car. So I need to be very clear on this so there's no misunderstanding. So this is a Python in your car. And you don't want that. So don't do this. This is dangerous. Don't do this. So this is Python in your car. Yeah, don't mix that up. So this is what we actually want, and this is what this talk is about. Python in your car. So to add Python to my car, the entry point I chose was the Bluetooth kit. And that sounds boring, I agree. So why would hacking the Bluetooth kit would be interesting at all? So if you look at this from a hacker's perspective, it's a little bit more clear because it shows up in the car dashboard menu, so it has the interaction to the rest of the car, at least to the steering wheel buttons and the dashboard menu. And it supports internet, and we all know like internet-enabled cars are the future, so sounds great. Also, it can play audio because, well, it's a Bluetooth kit. It's meant to connect your car to your phone to your car's speakers and microphones. And the most important thing, if the thing breaks while hacking on it, I can still drive. The car is not broken, and I can probably replace the Bluetooth kit. So the Bluetooth kit is my entrance vector to adding Python to a car. So we have to look at where the Bluetooth kit is in a car, so logically speaking. So most cars, you can actually get schematics. Well, it's not really schematics. It's more like a wiring diagram. It's more like a, well, what they use to fix your car. But it has most of the wirings, and it can be interesting to read that because you can see how the different buses are connected to each other, and it saves you from a whole lot of reverse engineering if you can just download these diagrams. And for example, for the Volkswagen Group cars like Audi, Seat, Skoda, and all those, they have a website called Erwin, or Erwin, or whatever, where you can actually download the official documents for a small fee, so it costs like €5, and then you can use 1 hour to just download all the PDFs. And if you do that, there's no need to pirate those or to get anything from weird locations. You can just download those officially. And if we look at this, well, not a modern car, so I was told that modern cars try to not use CAN anymore, and they have all this fancy Ethernet and whatever. I don't know about this. But the car that I have, which is from a few years ago, it basically, and most cars from the let's say the last 10 years or so are probably based on this. They have multiple CAN buses. So most of you probably heard what a CAN bus is. It's some bus system that's used in automotive, or that's mostly used in automotive stuff and industrial stuff because it's very reliable. We will talk a little bit more about this later. And there are multiple CAN buses in a car. So one CAN bus is dedicated for all the powertrain stuff. That, like, there's the engine control unit that controls the engine. This is what like chip tuners change to improve the car by reflashing the firmware. Then there's like all the critical sensors, like radar sensors for different types of driving assistance. There's like the brake control system, the ESP, the airbag sensors. So that bus usually runs at a high speed. Then there's another CAN bus that controls like doors and the steering wheel stuff and like climate and air conditioning. And it's called convenience CAN or K-CAN for Karosserie CAN. It's some German terms all over the place for some reason. And it runs at a lower speed. And then there's a third CAN bus that is the infotainment CAN bus where like the navigation system, the radio, they talk to each other, the audio amps, everything that's not so critical. And this is also where the phone kit is. So it's on the same bus as the radio and so on. All of these buses are basically firewalled, you could say, to each other. So there's a thing called CAN gateway, and it connects to all the CAN buses, and it has some rules of what messages to forward to what bus, and you can actually send messages to request a certain message to be available on some other bus. So it's not a firewall in a security sense, it's more to like protect the powertrain CAN from bad stuff happening on the radio or something. And there's also, most of you probably heard of the OBD2 connector, which is usually in the driver's, next to the driver's seat or something, where you can download diagnostic information about your car. It's not directly connected to any CAN bus, but it connects to the CAN gateway, and then you can talk to the CAN gateway and then route some messages to the rest. But either way, so we are on the infotainment CAN bus connected. Physically in the car, so this is my car, excuse the dirt, please. The Bluetooth kit is below the passenger seat, so you can just open it up and remove it, and that's how it looks like. No screws to open, no screws to lose. And that's the module itself. I mean, of course, it usually does not come with a warranty void sticker removed, but... So that's how the Bluetooth kit looks like. It's made by a company called Novero, which is a German company, again. Novero, I've never heard of that company, but I looked it up, and it was actually Nokia's automotive group, and they split up in 2008, so we expect to see some Nokia technology in there, maybe. If we open it up, we see this. So you can see that there's a 3G modem in it, or basically a phone, right? And there's the car interface at the bottom, and if we look on the other side, we see this, which looks more interesting. So this is not the phone, this is the car interface side. And first what we see is some microcontroller from Freescale. It's an S12X, it's some automotive stuff and some SRAM for it. It supports the CAN bus interface and so on. There's a CSR Bluetooth module, which we would expect because it's a Bluetooth kit. And then there's the Freescale IMX31. And it has some DDRS DRAM and a big NAND flash. And that made me curious, because if we look up the IMX31, it's a pretty big CPU. So it has an ARM11 at several hundred megahertz, and it has like all kinds of interfaces, like USB, and it supports video. They don't use that, but it's a pretty interesting chip, which was, I think, used in some phones back then, like some smartphones. And the interesting point is that, so Freescale states that two operating systems are supported, it's Linux and Windows CE. So let's hope it's Linux and not Windows CE. But it's usually not programmed bare to the metal or any real-time OS. So also, like, it's pretty high-powered, and I wondered why do you need so much power to do Bluetooth, like the Bluetooth phone bridging to your car? if we look at the features, so HD4 is, the device is called HD4. And it supports one interesting feature that I didn't expect, but again, I don't know much about cars. It does not only support the hands-free profile, which is basically taking the audio data from the car and sending it over Bluetooth to the phone and the other side. It also supports the remote SIM-Access profile, which means that there's a full phone in the Bluetooth kit, but it doesn't have a SIM card. It uses a SIM card from the phone. So most modern phones don't support this, unfortunately, like especially iPhones don't support it, Windows Phone doesn't support it, Android sometimes supports it, but all the Nokia feature phones that are so great, they all support this. And it basically turns the phone into a smart card reader, a Bluetooth smart card reader, nothing more. And the big advantage of this is that you can use the car's antenna and you save battery life on the phone and so on. And the HD4 also allows someone to take a laptop and use Bluetooth to connect to the internet over dial-up networking. It uses that, it's then like gives you a PPP session over 3G. And it also does speech recognition and speech synth, so you can do voice dialing with that, and you can control it via voice. And it can do music streaming via H2DP, so like an iPod can also do this to play on the car's speakers with that. So this is like what they announced, the features they announced. And if we look at these features from the hacker perspective, the remote SIM access profile means that all the SIM traffic is basically software controlled because it's bridged to Bluetooth and like it's not just a wire or something that it connects the phone's SIM card to something else, but it actually goes into the CPU, and the CPU will send the request over Bluetooth and so on. So this is the same for the dial-up networking feature. It means that there's software control over the PPP session. So the Bluetooth kit could actually build up their own internet connection, which may be interesting. And also, the voice control explains why they have such a beefy CPU, because to do decent voice recognition, you need quite a lot of CPU power. And that's why they have the several hundred megahertz CPU in there, mainly to do voice control. And then, of course, the hands-free profile, which it still supports next to RCEP, is that you can play audio and receive audio to the car. So let's take a deeper look at this. The thing is in your car, so the obvious thing is, yeah, let's just get a laptop in your car and a handheld scope. It should be easy. If you never tried that, it sounds like that. If you do, well, it's cold because you hack at night it's cold, and you're in the car. Also, there's this really bad trade-off, so you can either choose to leave the engine running or to not leave it running, so you either have a dead battery or you are dead the next morning, so it's a really bad trade-off. Also, environmental-wise, it's probably a bad idea to leave the engine running. And the next thing is when you try random stuff to the thing and you may shortcut something, you don't want to break the car. And if it looks something like that, you're doing it wrong. And I don't want to do it wrong, so what I did was I went to eBay and I bought a Bluetooth kit, another one, so I could use that on my desk. So what I actually got was not the HD4, but the HD5, which is the more modern version from this year. They basically have one more feature, which is that they support Wi-Fi sharing. So they build up their own internet connection in the Bluetooth kit, provided the phone can do the remote SIM stuff. And they share it over Wi-Fi. So from the hacker's side, this means that it builds up a Wi-Fi access point, so it has all of that logic. It builds up its own internet connection, and it has a router and net, and it's much more likely that this is a real operating system and not just some really bare to the metal or some real-time OS stuff where we can't do anything. It also turns out it's a different hardware platform, so it looks like this, except for the red cables, I added them. So we again see the Freescale S12X, the microcontroller. By the way, they are replaceable, so if you have the old one, you can just buy the new one and plug it in and it will just work. So it made it a bit more convenient because I know I had a backup unit that works in my car and I could hack the other one and then not risk making the car not having a Bluetooth kit anymore. So there's again, yeah, the Freescale, the microcontroller. There's again the CSR Bluetooth chip. And there's the Wi-Fi chip, which is also some Marvell chip. And the interesting stuff is actually on the other side. So there's the car interface, of course, those pins. But then there's a Marvell CPU. It's called 88CP95N. Never heard of that before. But we see that there's quite a bit of RAM again, 128 megabytes of DDR RAM. There is 120 megabyte of NAND flash, so it sounds beefy. There's some power management stuff. There's the 3G radio front end and the antenna. And there's two things that were not present originally. I will talk about that later. So if we look at the block diagram, it looks like that. We have the Marvell CPU in the middle. And we have the Wi-Fi attached over SDIO. We have the CSR Bluetooth chip. I think it's USB. We have the NAND flash, the RAM. Well, it's basically a block diagram of any product that uses this Marvell chip, except for the CAN stuff that's marked red here with the S12X and the whole car interface thing. This Marvell CPU, so I Googled it, and I wasn't successful, which is interesting. Looking for 955 instead of 95N gives a few more results, but still mainly some Chinese sites trying to sell you those chips. Marvell is pretty bad in providing actual information on their website. I don't know if it's better with an NDA or not, but I don't have an NDA, so I don't know. I would not buy those chips, because I don't know anything about these chips, but apparently they did. So it seems to be a PXA955, and the communication part, the CP, I think, means that like they have this integrated 3G modem. So it's a Cortex-A8 at roughly 1 gigahertz, so even better than the IMX31. And they have the 3G modem implemented on the same chip, so it's not implemented on the ARM, so there's a separate CPU, apparently, but it's still in the same on the same chip. And some cheap Android tablets, or not so cheap, some semi-cheap Android tablets use that, so that's where this chip comes from. The goal is still to boot disk on this thing on my desk. And so the plan that I had was, well, in the car, we know 12 volt, everything is supplied by 12 volt. So I connect 12 volt to the right pins. I hope it boots. And when it boots, I find the UART by just randomly scoping on some test points. And then I hope it's Linux that boots. And if it's Linux, I can install Python, and then I'm done. So let's see how this worked out. So this is the car interface. It's some 45-pin connector. If you look at the schematics that I talked about, you can derive the pinout. The most important pins here are ground and 12 volt, and the CAN bus pins that we may eventually need later. And then there are all the audio pins and the rest of that, which we don't need right now. So powering a thing up. So what happens when I apply 12 volt? And that's what I actually want to demo. Let's see if that works. So can you switch me over to VGA, please? Hello? VGA, please. Es wird gleich nicht blau, keine Sorge. Okay, so my setup here is, habt ihr die Kamera? Wenn nicht, ist auch nicht schlimm. Haben sie nicht. Okay. Ah, da oben kommt jemand. So someone is coming up with a camera, so. Anyway, so I wrote something that is, so I have a lab power supply here, and what you can see there is basically the current voltage and the current power consumption, so it's currently switched off. So if it doesn't work with the camera, I can just show this to you. Okay, that's great. Can you come here with the camera? Or nicht? It takes 10 or 15 more minutes. Okay, so can you switch back then, please? So the setup here is I have a lab power supply. I have the Bluetooth kit. And I have it's a Windows PC, sorry, that shows me basically the remote interface to the lab here. So what I do, I set it to 12 volts, so if I switch it on, we would expect the thing to boot. And I would expect it to roughly, let's consume like, let's say 200 milliampere or something. So I enable 12 volt and it draws like 50 milliampere. So, well, that's not so much. And then it goes out. Can you switch back, please? So the spoiler is nothing happens. It boots up for a short moment and then it goes off. And I mean, if we look at the block diagram, it kind of makes sense because the power management chip is controlled from that microcontroller. And yeah, if you have this thing in a car, you don't want it to drain the battery. It's still connected to the battery all the time because you want to be able to make Bluetooth phone calls when the engine is not running. But it cannot like consume 200 milliampere at the whole time. So they have some power management there. And it turns out that in this state where it draws 60 milliamps, the S12X is powered, but the main CPU is never powered. So maybe we have to send Ken message first to enable that. So this is a three-slide crash course for CAN bus. Basically, CAN is a bus system. There can be multiple devices connected to the same bus. It's a differential signaling. So what really matters is the voltage difference between two lines. CAN H and CAN L, so high and low, and there's some termination. So this is how it looks like. So again, it's always the voltage difference that matters. So if the voltage difference is small, so if CAN high and low are both at 2.5 volts, it's a logical one. That's just how it is. And if the voltage difference is big, like CAN low is driven to low and CAN high is driven to high, then it's a logical zero. That's how the signaling works on CAN. And the interesting part is now that if none of these wires are driven, like if no device is talking, they will be at 2.5 volts, so they are pulled to 2.5 volts. And only if the device is actually driving the bus, it will generate zeros. And if no device is driving, it will be one. So, and this is used when two devices talk at the same point. So let's say this is the second device, and it talks at the same time as the first device, so there's a collision on the bus, then it will drive where previously the bus was undriven, so it will turn the one into a zero. And this basically just means that it's all, when you have two devices talking at the same time, and one device is driving one and the other device is driving zero, the zero will win. And that's why it's called dominant bit, and the one is called recessive. So it means that on the CAN bus, collision is fully defined. Like, unlike Ethernet, where you just retry, on a CAN bus, like there's an arbitration scheme, and basically, so the very simplified version is, so every CAN frame can be 0 to 8 data bytes, and it has an 11-bit identifier, basically which devices, or which, well, it's just an identifier. So usually it targets, it shows what kind of data it is that you're sending. And if there's a collision, then the one with the lower identifier will win, but we don't need to know that really. There's a lot of other stuff like a CRC that we don't care about, because if we use a CAN interface to talk to the CAN bus, we use something that generates all this stuff. So what we need to know here is that there's an 11-bit identifier that is what kind of data, like a port number, and there's 0 to 8 bytes of data. So the revised plan to make this work and boot on our desk is we connect to the CAN bus while the device is in the car, and we capture all the CAN traffic, and then we go to the desk again and we replay the CAN traffic, and we hope it boots, and we find the UART, hope that it's Linux, install Python, and so on. So we need a CAN interface. Any CAN interface adapter should work. That's not totally stupid. So I use some specific one that looks like this. It's okay. It costs like $100. It uses some CAN controller that does not support such a high number of packets. Or the packet rate is limited. But for our purpose, it's okay. And you can really use any microcontroller with native CAN support, like even the small ones. But please don't try to bit bang the bus, because it's not fun. So we need to emulate that the vehicle has power. And there's something, now it's back to German, there's an S-Kontakt or Klemme 15. There's some German standard that says that Klemme 15, which is basically connector 15, is a contact that's 12 volt when the car is up, when the engine is running, and zero when the car is, or it's grounded when the car is not running. And well, today's cars don't have physical wires anymore, but they still have the CAN messages to basically convert that into a CAN message. So let's try doing this. So basically replaying all the traffic. So can you switch to BGA? So here we have our power supply again, and here, let's hope this works. So I wrote a fancy tool that, so we first enable the device again. We see it draws a little bit of power and eventually stops drawing a little bit of power after a few seconds. And klein Moment, ja gut. Okay, so this is the setup. This is the Bluetooth kit. This is the stupid Windows PC. It's a super old EPC that barely worked, but whatever. And this is the lab power supply, and the rest are cables. Okay. Was. Danke. So. Sorry. I need the screen output. I'm sorry. So when I press run, my stupid Python, Iron Python, whatever tool will send CAN messages that emulate the Klemme 15. So I press run, and it should hopefully work. Yeah, and we see it draws more power, and it draws what we expect. Yay! So that's good. So I will switch off the device. That was a. And yeah, sorry. Can you switch to DVI again, please? Okay, so the device draws reasonable power now, so it seems to be running. I can isolate the CAN message to be this particular message, so I replay just everything the car sent, and then I gradually, did a binary search basically to isolate it to this message. And basically, it's a bit field, so the 3 or the 1, I don't know which it actually is, means that Klemme 15 is 12 volts. Good. So sending this will make the device boot. So what's the firmware? The question is, we're still hoping for Linux, right? So next step was to find the UART. And I could ask them to switch around, but I will just show you the pictures. So what we will see on the UART, I just scoped a few test points, and I actually found a UART. It was pretty easy. There are only like 5 test points, and 2 of them are the UART. So what we see is this. It's U-boot. Wow, it's U-boot. OK, that's cool. And then it's Linux. And it's also BusyBox, by the way, for some piece. So I wonder, GPL. So I saw this sign, and it says prohibited for GPL cars without safety valve. And my car doesn't have a self-safety valve. This is weird. So where's my safety? I'm sorry. This is just a pun on LPG. So GPL. I didn't see a GPL in the owner's manual, which I guess is bad. And even more importantly, where can I ask to get the source code? I want the source code. And I asked this on a mailing list, and it's complicated. I'm not a lawyer, but it seems I need one when I ever want to sell the car, because now I have this thing with the GPL code in it, and I don't have the source. And sorry, I'm not good at this, so if someone can explain me where I have to go to get the source code, that would be great. Because the thing is, I don't really want to blame the car dealer for not giving me the source code, because they probably don't even know what a source code is, or may not care. And I can understand that. On the other hand, I have to go somewhere. So I wrote a mail to Novero and got no response. But so I guess I need some help here in doing the right thing. Either way, we are hackers, so we can get further without the source code. You know, local access means root, of course, or does it? So the device runs, boots into Linux, and I will show you later. But basically, it boots into Linux, it gives you a login prompt, And we don't know the root password. I eventually got the hash, so if someone has some spare time, we didn't succeed in like a few days of GPU time to get this into a password, but we could just modify the flash and change it there by this BGA flash and such an effort. Fortunately, U-boot is used in a non-secure configuration, so you can just hammer control C over the serial port and you will eventually get into the U-boot menu. And then, I mean, so the traditional trick that you use probably when you wanted to annoy your friend using Linux and he didn't give you the password, just append init bin sh and then you get a root shell, right? That should work. Well, it uses an init rd, so it's really rd init equals something. However, it doesn't work, and I mean the reason is we don't know the file system layout of the init rd, and there is no dev console, and they run some init script by default that doesn't need it. But however, what we can do is to use uboot to just dump memory, so we can just dump the init rd over the serial port, and then we do some unpack thing, and then we have the init script. So we can just we don't need the init script because it basically just finds the right rootfs. We can just directly boot the real rootfs, which is actually MIMO. So it's a full distribution and it has the bash and everything. So we can just use the trick there, and that actually works. And we can just remount the root, use passvd to change the password to something we know, and then we have root. So there are some hardware tricks on the device. So there is some pinout on the bottom that looked very suspiciously like a microSD slot. So I blindly added a microSD slot. And yeah, it works. And if we look at the init script, it actually probes for a rootfs on the microSD card and just boots from there. So that's even easier. there's also SimSlot. But it requires apparently telling the device that there is a SIM slot, otherwise it won't really use it. So I see some traffic, but it still searches for a phone and it doesn't like use the modem until it sees a phone. So it seems that you can reconfigure this via some DIAC interface over CAN to use that. I don't know. There's also a USB OTG port that's actually externally accessible behind some small latch on the package. So even without opening the case, you can access that without destroying any warranty voids. They use this for firmware upgrades and diagnostics. So you can put so it basically puts the log files on the mass storage if you attach the mass storage, or it will apply a firmware upgrade. However, I don't have a firmware upgrade, so I could only see the binaries doing this. The HT4, the slightly older Bluetooth kit, has with IMX31. It only has a host port, and that HT5 is a real OTG port, so you need one of these fancy Android tablet dongles there. You can buy them for a few bucks anywhere, which is basically micro B on the one side and A on the other side, an A socket on the other side. And then you can just put in any USB device. But by default, when it's a USB gadget, it's a serial port to the modem or something. But you can easily change this to USB Ethernet, which makes it a lot more convenient because theoretically, you don't have to. Once you did that, you can close the whole package and you can just connect to it from the outside world. Okay, but we still want to, do something useful with the thing on our desk. So we have to emulate the car, or at least the steering wheel buttons, the display, and everything that makes it work and keeps it alive. So the S contact CAN message, for example, but some more stuff. And now I was a bit naive, so I was hoping there was some CAN daemon that would just receive all the CAN messages, and it would be, it would be a big module having all kind of debug spew and symbols and everything, but there was no such thing. And in fact, when I sent a CAN message on the bus with my CAN adapter, I could not see anything on the Linux side. And only very special CAN messages did anything at all. And it showed that this S12X microcontroller that I showed you abstracts all of this on a very high level. So the interface they use between your dashboard display and the thing, it's called BAP. Very simplified, it allows the control unit, like the Bluetooth kit, to provide some values, like a screen content. And then it's the BAP protocol will make sure that whenever one of these messages change, it gets synchronized across the devices on the bus. It basically sends update messages. And it sends heartbeat, and if the device goes away by not responding anymore, the proper error message will be propagated and all of that. It's a well-defined way of providing messages, providing values, I guess. BAP means Bedien- und Anzeigeprotokoll, so again, some German thing. I don't know why they name it. So the previous version of this was called Data Display Protocol, and the new version is now a German name, either way. So it was hard to find anything more technical than this table, which is about the only thing you find on if you Google for this thing. And it talks about OSI layers, so I don't, whatever. So it gets slightly more useful when we look at what it actually is. So when I talk about, there are CAN messages, one or more CAN messages construct a BAP message. And a BAP message is basically, there are several opcodes. One opcode can be, send me all the values you have again because I just rebooted. Another message is like, okay, I updated this value, here's the new value. And then on one of the upper layers, it basically just, and that is something that's implemented not across the canvas anymore, it exposes all these values and their current value to the display unit. So I had to reverse this. It's not that difficult. So on the left, we see the CAN messages. And it's basically a fancy way of sending more than 8 bytes or messages with more than 8 bytes across the bus by just using multiple CAN messages. And so I did some emulation tool for this. And it looks like this. So you can see that there are all kind of so there's an LSG ID, which is the logische Steuergerät ID, again, some German term. Which basically means the control unit number. Then there's opcodes. So I don't know the names for all of these. I could get some of them by looking at binaries. Other, I just guessed. But we see that, for example, one of these messages that is synchronized and cached is the current screen content. So we can here see how it basically means phone is booting or something. So what we have to do is to write something that talks this protocol and shows me what would be shown on the car, because then we can start adding Python and do all our stuff without freezing to death in the car. So I have a demo for that. Can you please switch? So, oh, that's cool. Here's the serial output. Here's my fancy tool, and this is the actual camera. So I power it on, and here we see it booting, and it's going through some bootloaders, and here's U-boot, and now it's loading Linux, and here we see the emulated screen. It's not pixel accurate, but that's roughly how it looks in the car. And it takes a whole lot of time to boot. It actually boots from an SD card. It's slightly faster when it boots from flash, but I just copied the whole flash contents to the SD card, so in case I screw up anything, then it's not so bad. Yeah, so here we see the CAN adapter, which is USB to CAN. Lots of cables again, different lengths of wires. Okay, and here we are. So it now booted and it tries to pair with my phone. Sorry, the language is German. I don't know which CAN message should change the language to non-German, but either way, so I can hopefully abort this. And it actually paired now. So I can press OK, and I will be in the main menu. And It's basically a simulation of the car. It should actually work. I don't know why. Oh, down. Yeah, I'm stupid. So you can go to the menu, and you can actually do what you could do in the dashboard of the car. And the buttons, they are actually on the steering wheel. OK. Can you switch back, please? I think that's all enough for the camera for now. But thank you a lot for the camera. I think that's important. And if anyone wants to see this, you can just come here after, or, well, look at this. Anyway, so going back to the device and going back to Linux, we see that dbus is used very extensively. So as all the S12x messages, which are this microcontroller that connects to the car, they are just posted on the dbus. And there are various other programs that respond to these. And so we see screen updates, we see key presses, we see Bluetooth events when I connect to the thing, when I start a phone call, all of that, all of this communication between the individual modules work over dbus. However, we don't see raw CAN messages because they are abstracted away by the S12x. And so we see the GPS positions, for example, which is nice. We see the speed, but we don't see other stuff that's on the CAN bus. It may be possible to repro or to either use a debug thing in the S12x or reprogram it to do that, but by default it doesn't do it. So dbus, I tried, so I'm not good at using GraphVis, but I tried to build a diagram of all the communication on the dbus from the sender and receiver, and I came up with this, and there was no way, I think, even with the best parameters to GraphVis, to make this a readable thing. However, if we zoom in and just look at what we're actually interested in. So we see the tools providing the higher level menus. For example, there's the settings provider, which owns the settings menu. There is the call stack provider, which does the call management stuff, and various stuff like that. And these send messages to a thing called generic display, which handles the menus and handles scrolling through the menus and so on, and receives the key presses and then updates the screen and so on. But the screen data is actually, at this point, just a bunch of message IDs. And the next thing is then, next daemon then localizes these based on the selected language into real text and converts it to screen data that the car expects. So this, and it's not yet the BAP protocol, but it's more similar to that. So, and then it sends those to the S12X router, which then sends them over a spy bus to the S12X microcontroller, and that then sends it to the CAN. So adding Python, actually, at that point, it's pretty easy. If you're booting from SD card, so what I did was just to put a Debian root on there with Python in it. Writing to the screen from Python is actually not more than this. So you get the session, the dbus session bus, you get that S12X router, and you just send the binary data that is the screen. So there's some hello world in it. So that's how we can display something on a screen. However, there's some problem with it. So if we look again at the regular data flow, there's one of these providers. They send a screen ID. It gets translated into, or it gets converted into screen data with selections into, it gets localized, it gets formatted into the BAP thing, the S12X sends it over CAN, and then when I press a button on the steering wheel, the keys are forwarded and the menu eventually updates. And now we're going there with our Hello World Python script, and we're just sending it there, and it goes over the CAN bus, and it shows up in the dashboard. And then I press a key, and it still goes to the original thing, and the thing is just confused. So we have to fix this slightly. It's actually not a big deal, so it's some more lines of code that basically just create a logical screen and set it as active, and then suddenly all key presses are forwarded to this new logical screen that we created and not anymore to the original menu. And then we can just handle the key presses ourselves. And there are no more screen updates from the original logic. And so let me try to demo this. Can you switch back to VGA, please?
So let me try to not screw this up now. So I will log in with the password that I added with the init bin sh thing. I go into my my Debian root, and that's a bit small. Can you switch back? Yeah, that works too. Thank you. So I start the script that basically overrides the menu, and it shows my custom menu over the BAP protocol. And it would work the same way in a car. I mean, I had a hard time getting a car in here, so I can't show you in the car, but I can promise you it actually works if I put this back in the car. So I have a menu here where I can go to the choices, and then I can exit this tool, and then it goes back to the original menu. Thank you. So this actually allows us to write something that runs in the car that you can use from the steering wheel, that you can you shouldn't use it while you're driving, but in theory you could. It has access to the internet, so if you connect a phone with a SIM card that has internet access, it will build up the connection. You get the GPS data from your GPS, so you can write, I don't know, bad things and good things. So the question is, many people look into adding a PC to their car, and I want to propose this as an alternative because, so first of all, maybe if you have a car from the last few years that's from the Volkswagen Group, you maybe already have the hardware required to do this, or if not, you can easily buy the hardware from eBay or something and put it in your car. So you have, it's like I paid for this thing 200. If the older ones are cheaper, so it is not super expensive. And what you get is basically automotive proven hardware. So you get all the lifecycle management. A lot of people add a PC into their car, and then the next day the battery is drained because somehow the shutdown script hung or something, and that's bad. With this thing, it actually sends a control shutdown message when the Klemme 15 goes low, and then it gives the thing a few minutes to shut down, and if it doesn't shut down, it will cut the power, and all of this is implemented, and it's really hard to do anything harmful to the car because of this abstraction that happens. Really, whatever the Linux side does, it will not disrupt you from driving the car, and it will. The worst thing that will happen is that you can't do any phone calls anymore. But at least that's the idea. You cannot screw up anything else. If you want to, you could of course send specific messages to use any diagnostic features and then reroute messages. So there is no security at this point. This is all from a safety perspective. So you don't want to fire airbags by doing this. So. Can you brick your car? I will not say you can't, definitely not. Otherwise, you will just bring me bricked cars. Cars are, they are designed for safety and not yet, at least, for security. Maybe the really modern cars are. But this is not designed for security. So there was nothing in it that was terribly hard to hack or something. It's just that by default, it doesn't do anything bad. And especially the S12X, if you send too many messages, too few messages, it will always fail gracefully. It will send the correct error messages. It will not do random bad stuff. However, if you theoretically could connect to the powertrain CAN bus by sending the right routing messages, and it really depends on what you're doing. So whenever people come up with attaching to the CAN bus, they refer to this post, and I want to just translate this, it's a German post, of the experience that someone had adding something to his car. So but basically what that person said, and I just translated it to English, so I don't know if it's true or not. So he said, so I built an adapter that would lock various data sources and store them on a PDA whenever the car was moving, based on instructions I found on the internet. And then one day, on the way from Frankfurt to Cuxhaven, the instrument cluster failed. And after the instruments showed values again, the engine stopped, the central locking opened, and all the front airbags and belt fastener engaged. The car was wrecked since the B-pillars twisted due to the belt fasteners, and somehow the insurance company figured out that the airbag control units didn't register an incident from the accelerometers, but somehow else fired. And then, of course, there were all the custom cabling in the car behind the dashboard, so it was a pretty expensive experiment because the insurance didn't cover it because they saw that there was some tampering, and the car still had a significant value. I don't think this could happen, especially when you do this on the Linux side behind the S12X. We're not attaching to the powertrain canvas like this guy was doing. But be careful, it's your car. It's up to you if you void the warranty or not. This is also interesting, the whole thing for bad guys, because this Bluetooth kit has access to the microphone, of course. It has access to the internet, and it has access to GPS, so this is the ideal hardware for a tracking bug. And a short physical access to the unit is enough, so if you can build a firmware upgrade package, you don't even have to update the unit. So short physical access to a car is enough. But on the other hand, you could just deploy a dedicated bug that you built yourself, so I don't know if that's a big deal or not. But it's definitely hard to detect, because you would really have to dump the flash and see if there's anything changed. So I don't know if that's something you would call a real issue, or it's just for the tinfoil hat people. I don't know. But for us good guys, it means we can do, for example, all sorts of geofencing applications. When I arrive at home, it switches on my light. Yeah, I couldn't make up any better example, but maybe you are more creative than I am. You can do some, I don't know, so if someone, for example, could read the traffic from Google Maps or Bing Maps and modulate them into TMC so that the GPS picks it up, that would be interesting. I'm sure there are many, many things you can do with this. It's just Python, right? So that's it all. That's it. So eventually, I will upload my code for the simulator as well as the Python scripts that you can run on the thing to GitHub. They are not there yet. But yeah, that's all. And thanks for listening.
OK, thank you again very much, Felix. We have 4 minutes left. So if you have some urgent questions, just go to the microphone next to you. We have, I think, 8 in the hall. So there should be one. So we'll just start with you at microphone 1 over there.
Hello. Thanks. Also very interesting talk.
Sorry, just to interrupt you. If you're already leaving, just please stay quiet so we can finish the question and answer session. That would be very nice.
Okay. There will be an obligation to install so-called e-call modules in each and every car, which are supposed to automatically issue an emergency call when the car has a crash. Do you know of if the hardware used in that system is somehow similar to the elements that you have investigated?
I actually don't know that hardware, so it would be interesting to look at these. I'm pretty sure, or I would hope, that they are not using some Linux that first has to boot after an accident or something. So I would expect them to use something more closer to the metal, something that's like redundant. This whole thing is not, the Bluetooth kit itself is not designed for safety, so there are no redundancy, and like if the rootFS fails to mount, it just fails to mount. I would surely hope that the architecture of some emergency call device would be better, but I haven't looked at these, and unfortunately my car doesn't have one, otherwise I would have opened it, but yeah, it would be interesting to see what's inside them.
Okay, so we'll just take one quick question from the internet.
Hi. I will put two questions together here. So Stiti from ISE and Flux from ISE ask, could you ask if this, could the Linux device be used to access the microphones in the car and maybe used for spying if it had malicious firmware? And how much effort would it take to get to sensitive stuff like the steering servos?
So for a microphone, it's very easy. So it's actually GStreamer used, and it's the proper regular Linux audio interfaces that you know. It's really easy to get access to the microphone and upload them over 3G or something. So that's really easy. Getting access to like the powertrain canvas, I don't know. So if you reprogram the S12X, it works for sure. And I know the firmware update has a method to update that. I don't have the S12X code because I don't have a firmware upgrade. So if you send the right messages, I do think it works. However, it will not work by accident. So it's not that you poke some wrong values and it suddenly makes the car weird. But if you intentionally do this, I'm pretty sure there's a way. It's just not as easy as getting access to the microphone.
Okay, one last quick question just from you over there.
You said you saw the position data on the unit as well.
Mm-hmm.
The GPS usually is in the navigation system, so at least the position data is sent via CAN to this phone unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what it is used for? Good news is that you found it, because I was looking for that, or I didn't have time to really investigate. I'd only searched on the internet and didn't find any info yet.
So it's a good question why it is there. So I could, in that rootfs that I have, I just grabbed for the message that is sent on the dbus. And there's only the S12X router that generates this message based on CAN messages. There's no consumer. So there is, at least in this version of the software, there's nothing that would take this message. So I don't know why it is actually there.
Did you check if it's really real
it is
payload?
Accurate.
So it's the real position data.
It's the real position.
Okay.
And so the only thing I could imagine, so these devices also have something where you press a button in your car if you have a technical problem with your car or something. And in theory, they could like send that information over for someone to help you or something. But currently, that does not exist in the software. It's just a software thing. Currently, they are not using that information, at least not in the firmware version I'm looking at.
The other question would be, as you have like this help button, like calling the Volkswagen mm-hmm. hotline or whatever, and it depends on which country you bought. So if you bought it somewhere outside Germany, it'll call that
mm-hmm.
outside of Germany helpline. Is there a chance to reprogram that?
There's definitely a chance to reprogram that number.
Did you try?
I did not try it, but I know there, like there's this tool VCDS that you can use to reconfigure your car in all the various ways. And it's not a Volkswagen tool; it's a third-party tool. And
I know that tool, but I didn't find a way to reprogram the numbers.
There should be. So I haven't tried personally, but I've seen someone who claimed to have changed that number there.
Oh, interesting.
It's unit number 77, the telephone unit, and then some. I don't know the details. Sorry, but it's so it's in the EEPROM that's connected to the S12X. And the software pulls that number from the S12X and then dials it.
Thanks.
Okay, so time's up. Thank you again very much.